Welcome back, everybody, to a special little episode of Dices and Dexes. We know we've been missing our regular session times for the last few uploads, but hopefully this will be the last little special diversion, and then we'll be able to get back right into things. Today, I'm Thief. I'm the GM of the game. Hopefully you're familiar with my voice by now. I've got a couple interview questions for our three players: Captain, Neon, and Pix. And we're just gonna, do an interview. See what's up. Hopefully, talk about what's gone on with the campaign so far and see where the discussion takes us. So, Pix, we'll start with you since you're right next to me on the little Discord icon. First question is just tell us a little bit about yourself. You don't have to go, doxing yourself or anything. Please don't do that. But you can give us a little information, whatever you feel you want to share with viewers. Maybe a little bit about your experience with TTRPGs and Pokemon as well.
Hi everyone. I'm Pix. I play Adrian on the podcast. I've been playing Pokemon since quite literally before I could even remember, with my earliest Pokemon memory being deleting Thief's Soul Silver saves, like improperly just by pressing new game, but you can't like really save over it. So that was like my first experience with Pokemon. My favorite games are Sun and Moon. I think out of all nine, currently nine gens, those are the best. And I've been playing tabletop RPGs for roughly 7 years, if I remember correctly. No, 8. 8 years, because I started playing eighth grade.
Nice, good stuff. And Pix, tell us a little bit about your character. What inspired Adrian Silky and Adrian's goals?
So, the big inspiration with Adrian was when I heard this was in Johto, I immediately knew that I wanted to play someone from the Dragon's Den. And so I went up to Thief just after telling me about the idea for the campaign. And I was like, all right, here's my one caveat. I have to start with a Dratini. And so this just kind of spiraled from Dratini, who originally was actually inspired by a character in the Owl House. And, originally, Adrian was inspired by Luce, like subconsciously from the Owl House, with not having the same experience as everyone else with Johto, having not been introduced to technology as much as everyone else. And so, all these changes is what Adrian is getting used to. And Silky was inspired from kind of like the Palisman from the Owl House. And one of the Palisman from the Owl House really inspired Silky, especially with the original name. But I simplified it to just Silky from, I believe I was originally going to go with Silk String. And that's what really inspired Adrian, just someone who is trying to find out something new about the world, as well as having just a fun little goofy starter by his side that's is not going to be goofy by the end of the campaign.
Yeah, for sure. I know a little bit in the campaign, Adrian's talked about maybe eventually facing down Claire. I believe that was talked about with gym leader Chris in episode four, three or four, one of the two. What drove that goal for Adrian? Because that was something that came up in roleplay that I, as the GM, wasn't aware of until you talked with gym leader Chris about it.
Honestly, where that really came up was gym leaders in your campaigns and how we see them have always served like a governmental role. And so Claire at least as I remember from the show and the game, no, as I remember from the game, was a little immature. And part of me thought of that goal in the moment because, one, I needed a reason for Adrian to take on the gym challenge. But two, in a position like that, Adrian could serve as, like, the bridge between all this modern technology, but also cautioning of, like, hey, we can't forget our tradition. We can't forget what what our region was founded on. And so that's why Adrian wants to be that gym leader.
Okay, good. Yeah, definitely interested to see where Adrian goes. And just another question for you, Pix, before I move on to some of our other players. Very, you know, briefly, in depth, whatever you want. What would you say your favorite parts of tabletop RPGs and of Pokemon are?
Man,
so the two of them.
Man, I'm really, really gonna sound like Nemina here, but it's gotta be the combat. It's gotta be the combat.
That's fair.
I love
our combat is fun.
I love RP, but combat is always something I'm looking forward to. In Pokemon, because it means the chance to catch a new Pokemon. In D&D, because, dude, this is, sometimes after a long day or a long week, I just want to kill something in game. I just want to knock something out. I just want to roll my sparkly dice and see what happens.
New out of context quote: after a really long week, sometimes I just want to kill something. Somebody throw that in the server for me, please.
I got you.
Yeah, no, the combat's fun, and we can definitely tell Adrian likes to capture new Pokemon. You're currently sitting at, in episode 8, you've got 4 Pokemon, and Desmond's only got 2, and Jorah's only got 2 at that point, so pretty interesting to see how many more you've got compared to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of Adrian's strengths, pulling a little bit behind the curtain with the high bonus to Pokemon handling, that Adrian's captures are definitely much easier than everyone else's.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for answering those questions, Pix. I'm gonna move on to Neon. We'll move on to you, friendo. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, a little bit about yourself, your experience with TTRPGs, and your interest with Pokemon, and any sort of projects you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. I play Desmond. I'm Neon. I'm a computer science student. I enjoy 3D modeling in my free time and performing in musicals and ballets. Performance has been a big part of my life growing up. And my experience with Pokemon, my first experience with Pokemon and what got me to like it was, I got a hand-me-down copy of Pokemon Emerald from my cousin, and I played it on my Game Boy. I didn't really understand the purpose of the game, but I just liked how the character looked sprinting up and down that first little vertical stretch in Emerald. And I would just do that for long stretches at a time. I don't know. I was a little child. I was like 5. And eventually I figured out what the purpose of the game was, and I started to actually, you know, like the gameplay.
So you just wandered around for a little bit, not sure what to do, and then eventually figured, oh, maybe I should, like, fight these things that keep popping up in the grass.
Yeah, no, it wasn't even necessarily wandering around. It was literally just up and down that north and south stretch in the first section of Pokemon Emerald.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And
just running, like, why do these dogs and birds keep attacking me?
Yeah, mostly Wurmple, but yes.
Right, Emerald.
I've been playing TTRPGs for 3 years when my brother-in-law introduced it to me. My first character was a bard because I'm a musical theater kid at heart, and that was super fun. I have one of my favorite parts of TTRPGs and stage performance is getting into a character, and with TTRPGs specifically, getting into a character and coming up with a theme for that character. And then I love flavoring abilities to match a character's theme. That's one of my favorite things. And then with Pokemon, my favorite part of Pokemon, honestly, just enjoying the creature designs. I really like Pokemon's designs, and I really like getting to travel through a region and watch them grow.
Do you have a favorite Pokemon design?
my favorite Pokemon design.
Out of all 1,025?
Oh, gracious, is that how many there are?
Yeah, 1,025. I had to figure that out the other day because the server I'm in, we were doing some statistics to figure out a proper equation to figure out, based off your birthday, what Pokemon you are.
Oh, interesting. Well, my favorite Pokemon is Gallade.
Is that your favorite design as well?
See, that's the question I'm asking myself now. My favorite Pokemon is Gallade, but my favorite Pokemon design, is it different? My favorite Pokemon design? Mudkip. Mudkip is shaped like a friend, and he's adorable.
He is friend-shaped. All right, Neon, next question for you. Tell us a little bit about your character, Desmond. What inspired him? Yeah. What inspired Zephyr, your starter, your fletchling? And what inspired Desmond's goals? And how have you seen those goals develop over the campaign so far?
Yeah, so Desmond is an outdoorsman raised as a city boy in his father's aviary in Kalos. But he loves taking in nature, specifically flying Pokemon, because he spent so much time in his father's aviary growing up. And he's a little hot-headed, he's got a bit of a short fuse. He's very passionate, though. And what inspired him was, if the hypothetical question every Pokemon enjoyer has asked themselves at some point, what type would I specialize in if I were a Pokemon trainer or a gym leader? And my answer was always flying type, because I think it would be so fun to just hop on the back of your pet and fly around. That sounds so amazing. And so flying type is what I chose as my character's specialty. And I just thought, where does it make sense for a flying type trainer to be from? Oh, Kalos has sky battles. And also, I speak a little bit of French from when I took French in high school. I know we have some French listeners, so I hope I'm not butchering it for you guys.
What about what inspired Zephyr as your starter, maybe just him being the Kalos bird?
So, my original choice for starter Pokemon would have been Noibat, but we have a dragon specialist already. And it would only have been Noibat as opposed to another flying Pokemon, because Noibat is one of the very few Pokemon who are flying type primary, which doesn't really affect the gameplay at all. But it's just interesting that, you know, we have a bunch of dragon flying types, but Noivern and Noibat are the, to my knowledge, I think at this point still, the only flying dragon types instead of dragon flying types.
And they looked at Noivern and Noibat and said, you know, I know they are dragons, but I think they fly more.
That's going to be one of the greatest yes. conflicts we ever run into if we find a dragon we flying run into a type.
Yes. And then Zephyr, obviously, other than being the Kalos bird, I do really like Talonflame, and Peregrine Falcons are my favorite bird, and that's what Talonflame is. And Zephyr's adorable, and I've grown... Honestly, I didn't really have that much of a connection with Fletchling before this, but role-playing with Zephyr and going through all this stuff with him has made me appreciate Zephyr, Fletchling, a lot more. Fletchling is definitely one of my, in my top 10 favorite Pokemon at this point, specifically because of this campaign. But other than being the Kalos starting bird, there really wasn't much else behind it other than it couldn't be a Noibat, and I wanted a flying type from Kalos, and it was going to be a Fletchling. But Fletchling's also cute. And just Zephyr's personality is sort of based off Desmond's personality. He definitely takes after his trainer in his... I guess Desmond's not as feisty as Zephyr, but Desmond does get excited, and he's got a short fuse, and Zephyr just manifests that in a different way, where he just is very excited and wants to take on the world, even though he's just a small burb.
Nice. Love to hear it. Maybe we'll see a little more of what that short fuse looks like when Zephyr evolves and finally gets that fire type.
Yeah.
All right, Neon, you answered my other question already about your favorite parts of TTRPGs and Pokemon, so I'm going to move on to our last player, Captain. Captain, tell me a little bit about yourself, about your experience with TTRPGs and your experience with Pokemon.
All right, two of those are super easy to answer, but my experience with Pokemon is a bit of a journey. So, hi, I'm Captain. I played Jorah in the campaign. I have been playing TTRPGs in general for a few years before high school, off and on. But my first main experience was freshman year of high school in D&D Club. Torbjorn, my beloved. He was really fun because the campaign itself was incredible. We had a great party and a very simple but effective concept. And from then on, I was in D&D Club every year, and that kind of spiraled into basically everyone in the friend group becoming a DM at some point and running something. Like Neon, I am also a bit of an actor, though I've had to kind of put that to the side a little bit. I'm currently in that what am I going to do with the rest of my life phase, so been figuring that out. However, TTRPGs and recently Pokemon have become something I really enjoy because it's so fun and very neurally stimulating. Pokemon for me has been very weird because when I was a kid, the first Pokemon game I remember playing was Pokemon Pearl for the DS, and I loved Pearl, I beat Pearl, and then I really didn't play another Pokemon game that much. Around Sun and Moon and X and Y, I fell off the Pokemon train, but then Scarlet and Violet had been out for a little bit, and the game had been updated to a point where it's not as poorly optimized as it was on launch. And I had a Nintendo Switch, and I had been wanting to get back into Pokemon, so I thought, you know what, let's see what Violet has to offer. I like robots, I think they're cool. I enjoyed their designs more than Scarlet's, which is the main reason I picked it up, and it has quickly become my second favorite Pokemon game, because nothing will ever beat Pearl, because childhood game.
Nice, love that. Scarlet Violet, very popular game in our group. I am the only one with Scarlet, though, but love playing it with you all. Little next question for you, Captain. You joined the campaign pretty suddenly. We had to phone you in when Felix's player, he had some life stuff come up and he had to take a hiatus from the game. So tell us a little bit about Jorah, who did show up so suddenly. What inspired Jorah, your starter, Cola, your Shinx, and what about his goals?
So Jorah is a combination of a lot of things from a lot of places, one of which serendipitously kind of wrapped itself back around, because Jorah Fencer is a character I have been trying to play for years. I have known Thief for a while, Thief and Pix, and we were originally trying to play the Pokemon Tabletop United system, which is confusing, but Jorah was the first character I created for that system. He was much different. However, every time we had tried to play it, I had made Jorah because I was so committed to saying Jorah will be the character I play. That ended up not happening, unfortunately. But when I was phoned in to hop into the campaign, I said, well, I already know the name. It's got to be Jorah. His new goals, however, were probably subconsciously inspired by Pokemon Violet, where he is much more of a, because this is a mechanically advanced and technologically advanced Johto, I decided that if nothing else, Jorah could learn what's going on just through the machinery. So he is very engineering and tinkering based. His ability, jury-rigged knowledge, is one of my favorite abilities I've ever had the pleasure of using. Free proficiency bonus up to your intelligence modifier is such a powerful skill, and I'm waiting for it to get even stronger as the campaign progresses.
Writes that down.
As for the starter, Cola, so Jorah is from Sinnoh. And I made him from Sinnoh because Gen 4. I like Gen 4. And so I thought, all right, well, if I'm going to be from Sinnoh, I need a Sinnoh Pokemon. And Shinx, that whole line, has always been one of my favorites, even though competitively and gameplay-wise, they're not really that good. I love them. Shinx is my funny little Zapcat, and Luxio will bite you. And only half of the time it's affectionate. But I don't know, something about their designs with Shinx's dopey little eyes becoming so full of determination and valor through his evolutions. It's really fun to me. Something about the designs have always struck me as very important and very, like, they are begging to be a starter. They have three stages. The only thing holding them back is their type. If Shinx was not an electric type, they could be a starter.
Yeah, agreed. Shinx is definitely one of the mons of all time. We love Shinx. I used one in my Legends Arceus playthrough. It was great. And lastly, Captain, what would you say your favorite parts of TTRPGs and Pokemon are? You might have touched on it a little bit, but let's maybe hear some more details.
So my favorite part of TTRPGs is really hard to pin down because I would not say I have a favorite part of TTRPGs. It all depends on the party I'm in and the campaign we're doing. Because to me, D&D is a vehicle to tell a story and have fun. And if you would ask me, hey, what's your favorite part of D&D a year ago? I probably would have said the shenanigans you can get up to, because I was playing a lot of Epithet system at that point. If you asked me a week ago, I probably said combat's pretty fun, but it can drag on. So I really enjoy quieter moments and, you know, talking with the party members. My answers change a lot because the system is not what I think about. I think about moments of a campaign. I think about moments between party members, or I think about, you know, to reference a popular post, I think about rolling a natural 20 and flapping your arms hard enough to generate lift. As for Pokemon, I am almost the complete opposite of Pix in this regard, where my favorite part of Pokemon is exploring and finding all of the new Pokemon, seeing the crazy landscape they can create. Violet did this a lot for me with the Area Zero. I like to explore the world and see what they're trying to do with it in this new gen. I want to see the new designs for things. I want to find old friends and I want to make new ones. It's also why Pokemon Legends Arceus is such an amazing game to me, because that is most of what you're doing. Though despite that, I have never filled out a Pokedex.
To be fair, when there's 1,025, it's pretty hard to do that. All right, thanks for answering all those questions, Captain. With kind of just some intro individual questions done, I've got a group question for you all that I want to jump into. What would you say the strengths of this group of players are? What makes it fun to play with each other? You all can answer, you know, individually if you want, or this can be more of a discussion question, but I'm curious to see what you guys as players think about, well, this group of players.
We've all done theater.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, then do it.
We're all theater kids.
I was gonna try to like come up with something, but no, that does help.
the four word answer. We've all done theater. Oh man, yeah. I mean, I love the role play we get into.
Yeah,
it's super fun.
I feel like we're all kind of like, I feel like we're all a little quippy with each other. I feel like we could be a little more quippy, but it's It's a lot of fun seeing just how we interact. This is just an idea. I'd love to get like our Pokemon interacting with each other's Pokemon and see how we can like throw ourselves into that situation.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite Pokemon interacting with Pokemon moments was when we were in Kayla's house, and they've got Kibbles the Skitty, and the cats were like chasing Fletchling around. I thought that was pretty cute.
Oh, where, Silky made herself into, like, a springboard to
throw Skitty for a Comet, right?
Yeah, for Comet, yeah. Wait, no, not Comet. Oh, Comet wasn't there.
That was earlier. Later on, yeah, you did that for Skitty.
Well, dang, I thought that was going to be a more in-depth question, but Theater Kids, I guess, sums it up pretty easily.
Honestly?
Yes. I would say what makes it fun to play with specifically Pix and Neon is that, number one, we are all theater kids, but we all have such different characters. And yet it's this, I don't want to say comedy of errors because that's not what it is, but it's this we're all here, right? The Pokeathlon got exploded, and we're all here. We might as well try to make the best of it. It's just the fact that we went through all of that. We've trauma bonded, essentially.
Yes.
And we're like, well, we can't exactly, you know, we can't get out of it now. We're kind of stuck together.
And also, like, another...
Yeah, another, we're all just from such different worlds.
Another thing that also, like, really helps us is since Scarlet and Violet have, like, online multiplayer, we did that a lot before actually playing together. And what I just find endlessly hilarious is how our raid battles would go. Before Thief and I had even beaten the game, we were playing with Neon, and we were trying 5-star raids with, like, level 4, with, like, level 40s going up against 75s. It was hilarious.
75s with 5 times the health, I think it is.
Something. Mm-hmm. It was an insane amount of health.
Gosh. Yeah, the raid battles, they're crazy. I definitely think, you know, the out-of-game fun we've had with each other definitely helps. You guys being theater kids, you're on the same wavelength, and then role play wise the trauma bonding between the characters definitely, yeah, all of those are good stuff, definitely makes it fun. Any other thoughts on this question? Next little part of the interview is just I want to hear some campaign discussion. You know, I've seen a couple podcasts, they do like post-show discussions. I just kind of want to chat about the campaign, what's happened, your thoughts on different events, etc. We can focus in on, naturally, the first arc of the campaign, which is like the Pokeathlon World Championship. Episodes 1-5 for the listeners is kind of how I've divided that up, just since it's everything from literally the start of the campaign to the end of the attack on the PAWC. The floor is yours if there's anything you all in particular want to chat about with episodes 1-5.
I love Minnie. Minnie was the driving force to get the group together initially. And I love that when we actually started participating in, like, mock Pokeathlons, it was like, wait, what is our team name? Immediately just, we're Team Minnie. We're Team Minnie. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
I'm realizing, Captain, you don't know what everyone's talking about. I don't know. Did you ever go and listen to episodes 1-4?
I did a while ago.
Okay, so you've got a vague idea.
Vaguely. I'm just like, yeah. You're like, all right, we're going to start all the way back at episode 1. I'm like, all right, that's 4 episodes before I even existed.
Yeah.
So, might take a little bit for me to have much to say.
I will say this. My favorite moment, despite everything with Minnie, despite everything with Kibbles, BB and Kled, my favorite moment has to be catching Gauntlet. Gauntlet was... I was still kind of coming into finding out how I wanted Adrian to, like, decide Pokemon that he wanted to capture. At this point, he's just capturing Pokemon he likes. But catching Gauntlet was a moment of, like, ah, this would be funny. We have Pokeballs. We have one Pokeball. Let's make sure it doesn't go to waste. And then I end up catching Gauntlet, and it's like, all right, sweet summer child, let's cause some mischief.
Yeah, I completely forgot to have... It was in my notes at the start of session 1 to, like, give you guys those Pokeballs, and I completely forgot about it until the random encounter, and it was a random encounter with the Jeep crashing. And I was like, oh, shoot, this is a Pokemon game. They need Pokeballs. So I'm glad I remembered about that.
Yeah, I think it was really neat and funny the way that up until Tusk, all of our captures were, like, willing. It's like I'm going to hold out the Pokeball and see if the Pokemon comes to me.
And then Tusk said, nah, screw you.
Tusk was like, dude, yeah. I hate you.
And now he's mad. He's mad all the time. Understandable.
Yeah. Well, on the bright side.
He's getting there.
He's getting there. I think it's funny how the first male capture I have absolutely hates me, and it makes total sense because the ability is rivalry.
We do rivalry a little differently.
Yeah.
It's based off type, which means you get Tusk high enough, he's going to destroy dragon types.
Oh, yeah. Tusk is... I've always joked around in this first arc that, like, this first chapter, I've always joked around that Tusk and Silky are going to, when they evolve eventually into Haxorus and Dragonite, that they are going to be absolute monsters.
And my team is only half flying type. I've got a fairy type.
Yeah.
We haven't encountered any flying types other than, you know, Zephyr.
Yeah, Zephyr's unfortunately been the only one. I think I've talked about the statistics, but, you know, I've tried to make it at least a 25% chance each random encounter reroll for you guys to get, you know, one of your respective types. Dragons are a little less common, but gosh, Zephyr has just been the only flying type somehow. But
I love my Stacy Flower Fairy. She's adorable.
She is. Mishral was a Pokemon where, when we did that random encounter, I wasn't quite sure how to handle that. I kind of just had her float around, and that's how the spacey flower thing happened, because I was like, I don't fucking know what to do with this Flabébé. I gotta give you guys an opportunity to catch it, but fuck if I know what a Flabébé is gonna do with you all.
How does a Flabébé think? Does it think?
Does it think? The answer is probably not most of the time. And her accidentally winning a race against Zephyr caused by his own draft.
And then shortly after catching Zephyr, you guys had the encounter with the Nidoran twins.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I was so... Mm-hmm. I was so worried about them once crap hit the fan. That was, oh my gosh. I'm so glad they're okay.
Yeah, the Nidoran siblings were there, and gym leader Chris got you guys into one of the matches at the end of the day, and then, as Pip so aptly put it, shit hit the fan. Let's maybe talk about that, because that's kind of the culmination of the PAWC arc.
Yeah. Yeah, going into this game, I didn't really know what to expect exactly, but it wasn't terrorism. But I'm so glad that my expectations were subverted, because it's been so interesting.
I mean, when you think about it, a lot of the Pokemon plots do revolve around terrorism.
That is true.
Yeah.
But it's just very weird.
So close to real world terrorism.
Yeah, what essentially happened in this campaign is someone literally bombed the Olympics.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Which does not happen often.
Ever? I don't think.
I would hope not ever.
Hope not ever.
It was an experience, because suddenly it's just, explosions go off, end the session. I'm like, what? What do you mean? What do you mean that's the end of the session? Are we dead?
No, you're not.
Did we finally piss you off enough to just rocks fall, everyone dies?
Gosh, that would have been because we recorded that session. Like, the end of that session happened like a few nights before episode one dropped. And if I just did a TPK a few days before episode one dropped, that'd have been crazy.
All right.
Just like, yep, everyone here is dead. Whatever you thought you knew, it's not happening. We're actually going back to Kanto.
No, we're not going to Kanto. I know it's right next door, but we're not doing that. This is about giving Johto something of an identity.
Yeah, because yeah. Right now
you walk up to the tunnel. A mysterious force prevents you from going further.
it's more
Professor
like
Professor Oak's voice echoes in your mind.
Dude, what is Elm doing? What is Professor Elm doing?
Nothing, as far as we know.
We gotta go to New Bark Town. I know the one joke that came out of the PAWC attack was when we finally made it to the. When we made it to the forest to hide, it was just a moment of like, there's a big tree. I just send out Pancham and I send out Gauntlet just to see what happens. And like, that was where Gauntlet off screen met up with Mankey again. And that was a really nice, funny, like little bit. And it was nice knowing that I didn't just kidnap a friend.
No, you totally did kidnap a friend. Like, Pix, you definitely did that.
Yeah. Look, if I had another Premier Ball, I would have caught Mankey too.
Oh, you would have kidnapped two people.
I'd have kidnapped both of them, and then it's fine.
At that point, I'd have been like, all right, Adrian, you're no longer a dragon-type specialist.
Yeah.
Fighting-type specialist. I really liked the warehouse. That was really fun, fighting the warehouse, because I felt like I was in danger, and that's also not something I was necessarily expecting that soon. Like, the person Desmond felt in danger because, you know, he was being attacked by a Pichu, and one of my favorite moments in this campaign... What?
You can't see it, but I'm nodding right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one of my favorite moments to have come out of this campaign, at least for Desmond, was Asteroid Destroyer the Electabuzz. And that's not even his name, but that's what we were calling him.
I love Asteroid Destroyer.
Because I had made a table, and I think you rolled a 7 or an 8 on the table, and so Electabuzz was one of the higher results, because he could have been one of the stronger Pokemon who could have helped. And just from Pokemon handling checks and persuasion checks and insight checks, it was just a cluster mess.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, is Electabuzz is trying to Thunder Punch Neon, but then it's like, Adrian's chill enough to where Electabuzz is like, oh, this kid might die. My trainer wouldn't like if I stood here.
Yeah. It's, oh man. I also remember just waiting by the corner, ready to return Asteroid Destroyer if he came after me. And then that happened, and then I just threw him over the shelf back to where the fight was.
It was like three separate encounters were going on. Felix was trying to punch Kled. Desmond were trying to get out of the warehouse with the Pokeballs, and then Desmond was trying to not die to Asteroid Destroyer. That was such a...
I really enjoyed the chaos of the warehouse.
That really is the only way to describe it. Chaotic.
It was chaotic. Yeah. Oh boy.
And also, like, our Pokemon being on such low HP when we went in there.
Yeah, you guys... Yeah. Had about two fights before going in there, and then you had to fight BB and Jet, whose Pokemon weren't designed to be unbeatable. They were just designed to be a little more challenging than I am forgetting their names, the two trainers, Marie and
I keep thinking Candace, but I don't know if I'm thinking of that because of Phineas and Ferb.
You're thinking that because of Phineas and Ferb, who's not Candace, but
I don't remember
the two warehouse workers outside.
Yeah.
What did you think about, I guess, the characters you encountered during the PAWC arc? You know, you had BB, Jet, Kled, you had Gym Leader Chris, you had all the staff workers at the PAWC. Jorah had some of the other quote-unquote, like, survivors in the attack that he met and encountered and whatnot. And then, of course, Jorah had Desmond and Adrian that he met. So I guess what's your thoughts on that?
I think Jake was funny. The guy who was driving the go-kart and then crashed. It was a funny moment that I really liked, that really painted the picture, that really just painted a picture of, one, how bad dice rolls can be, but also, two, just how chaotic this campaign can be sometimes. It was when we were fighting the two workers, and we win the battle, and they're like, okay, you may have won the battle, but we still have to arrest you guys. And we're continually trying to persuade them. We keep failing. And they're like, all right, let's phone Jake. And I'm like, and I look at my notes and I'm like, wait, Jake, we know that guy. I swear to God, we know him. And we cause enough of a ruckus to where he's like, guys, I crashed the cart and these bozos helped me out. They're cool. Don't arrest them. And that was a very relieving moment for me.
Yeah.
Very funny.
And we're breaking and entering for a good cause.
Yeah, guys.
I promise.
Look, crime may not pay, but it is necessary.
Dude, that prison... I'm just saying, if we were arrested, that prison break arc would have been crazy.
The campaign very quickly goes from, oh, hey guys, let's do the gym challenge, to we are on the run from the law. We get contacted by the group. Hey, you're not exactly the law-abiding type, right?
Oh, that's what their names were. Hazel and Marie.
Hazel, yeah. That was the other one. Thank you, Pix.
And then meeting Gym Leader Chris. Gym Leader Chris, I feel like serves like a... Gym Leader Chris really serves as, like, I feel like a role model. Like, I definitely want to save Gym Leader Chris for, like, either a midpoint in our gym battles or one of the very last. Just because I feel like that would be a big rite of passage for us as both players, but also our characters.
Jorah would be like, who the fuck is this?
Literally.
I did see Gym Leader Chris. I've never interacted with them. At least on screen. I do know that we did leave Gym Leader Chris to fight three of the grunts, and we don't know what happened to them after that.
Oh, it was
so
more than three. Yeah, because we did not help.
to also be fair, we were trying to help people escape from the rubble and the PAWC. Mm. So getting in a fight with Gym Leader Chris, who is literally using probably Pokemon in like the levels in the equivalent like level 70s, while we have like level 10s, is like not good at all. We would have gotten really wrapped in the chaos at that point.
Yeah, and my bird also had lung damage.
Yeah,
so... well, your bird got lung damage.
Yeah, at that point, my bird had lung damage.
Well,
at the point where I saw Chris fighting them.
Yeah. It was...
After I sent him up to see if he could see anything. Yeah.
Yeah, smoke rises.
Yep.
Womp, womp, womp. Womp, womp,
womp. You know the, you know the Breaking Bad meme where it's like, is this the moment where Walter became Heisenberg? That was the moment where Zephyr got lung damage.
Is this the moment when Zephyr got lung damage? Yes. Yes, it was.
Yes,
it was.
Is this the moment when Zephyr became Lungenberg?
Oh my gosh.
That's a quote of all time. Wow. Do you have any theories about the attack?
I think Kled's getting back at us.
Kled?
You think Kled started that? Ain't no way.
No.
I have a theory it's a group that's unhappy with how Johto is right now. Especially with, like, this once rich in culture region being swiftly overtaken by industrialism. So I can imagine, like,
yeah.
I know Adrian Adrian's not exactly too excited about that. And
Adrian's behind it. I knew it.
Adrian was the villain all along.
I could definitely, if that theory is true though, I could definitely see there being a conversation where Adrian is separated and speaks with one of the members of that group. I could definitely see there being an interesting conversation there before or during a Pokemon battle.
Personally, I don't have much to add considering I was around kind of later on. And everything else I could talk about, I don't think is uploaded yet.
Counterpoint. You know a little bit of information that the other player characters don't, because Jorah knows who some of the missing persons are. Like, Jorah's connected to the Melon Company. He's got quite a bit of ties to some of the aftermath of that attack.
That's true.
Board members gone, some of your internship friends are gone.
Like, that's why I think they're unhappy with Johto, because a lot of the targets were Melon Company.
Yeah, I'm assuming at least some of the PAWC affairs were like sponsored by the Melon Company, right?
Oh yeah, the promo balls that everyone has.
Yeah.
Those were Melon Company made. And all of the kiosks were Melon Company.
We could go into debt with the Melon Company.
You can't go into debt with the Melon Company. We did canonize that.
I mean, if there is a group that is trying to work towards a new or just destroyed Johto, them being pissed at the Melon Company makes sense. But as to why, we would need to run into that group again in order to really hammer out some details. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I don't feel very confident that we could win that.
Depending on
who we find.
Yeah. I also think that this is an interesting theory that just popped in my head. But if they're taking a lot of people from the Melon Company, do you think they're trying to develop something?
You know what? That's a good point.
We have to remember this. Let me ask you this. How many legendary Pokemon dwell within Johto?
What?
We have five. We have five legendary Pokemon in Johto. And one mythical.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Not saying they're trying to capture them.
I know that the plot of every game revolves around the box legendaries, but this team's going above and beyond if they're trying to take five separate legendaries to do something. This is actually perfect. All we need to do is let them try to do their thing. The legendaries won't agree. They're going to wipe them out. Then we go in and we have to calm down the legendaries. Clearly that's what'll happen.
Yes. We have to soothe the legendaries. That I guarantee no one's going to die from that.
I mean, like, I'm different.
That's true.
Jorah, the science major in the group. His reason for why he'll beat and survive the legendaries, I'm built different.
Nah, I'm just better.
Love hearing the thoughts on the villains, whoever they may be, whatever their goals may be and their plans in the future. Moving on to episodes 6 through 8, this is kind of like when the journey properly is beginning. We're out of the prologue. You guys are traveling around. You're exploring Johto now. You know, we had the day where you guys spent exploring Goldenrod City a little bit. You went to the casino, you went to the park where the Nidorans were, you went to Minnie and Kayla's. You next day, Jorah, you met up with your boss, Daisy Oak, at the Melon Company. You guys traveled through Route 35, and then we got to the infamous Ranger Station. So let's hear some discussion on that, episodes 6 through 8. Maybe we start I'm noticing we jumped around a lot with the previous discussion, so maybe let's start chronologically and then move on from there. I'm gonna keep quiet. I want to hear player thoughts on this stuff.
I still can't believe you duped us with that Electabuzz. I can't believe you. That was hilarious.
I was really proud.
We're Electabuzz face blind.
Yeah, wow. I can't believe it, guys. We can't tell Electabuzz apart.
Yeah, how dare us?
Okay, I don't remember what the character's name was, but I remember there was someone named, like, Shady Mo.
Oh, yeah, Shady Mo. That is,
Shady
that
Mo?
Is something.
Okay. Yeah, I remember Shady Mo.
When we were wandering around town and the Nidoran twins just up and disappeared because they found their national park, because they found their park, that had me so worried because I went into like full parent mode of like, where are the kids? Where
did they go? They were just here.
They were here 5 seconds ago. Now they're not.
then me having to be like, oh, wait, those aren't your Pokemon?
You know, one thing I find hilarious is, remember at the park where the Nidoran siblings went back, we also have to completely remember that the Pokemon that guided us there was a Pidgeotto. We totally could have tried catching that.
If we caught a Pidgeotto, I think Thief would have just ended the campaign out of spite. Especially because I don't think we could have proved that that was a wild Pidgeotto.
Oh, and also another thing is, like, those national parks are probably protected. So
that's what I figured. Yeah. Otherwise, I definitely would have tried.
D-100 is arrested for poaching.
It was nice to explore Goldenrod. It was a little off-putting just because it was described as, like, the streets are, like, very empty. And then we got to the game corner, and it's like, oh, yeah, when shit happens, people gamble.
And the sounds of the Voltorb exploding being just all of the sound from the machine cuts out during the explosion noise.
I did think that was very funny, but also very thoughtful of the people there. Mm. At the time, I attributed that to, oh, the machine is on the fritz. But under the new kind of thought process of, they got rid of the explosion sound because everyone there just basically went through an explosion.
Yeah.
Multiple. That would have been just horrifying, going through the game corner and all of a sudden, like, 10 people lose Voltorb Flip at the same time, and it's like, great, now we have
an explosion.
Now it's like, oh, great, now the game corner's empty.
Now we need to very quickly tell people things are okay.
Yeah, I do find Shady Mo to be really funny, of like, how much you got, like, really trying to play up this persona of being this really shady guy.
Being Shady Mo.
And then it's just like, yeah, you need a coin case to play. Like, we just do it for the bit. I just do it for the bit because I'm told to do that.
I do it for the love of the game, baby.
Yeah. I love that.
And, like, honestly, we should all be so lucky.
Yeah. I'm gonna be 100 with you. It definitely would have been a Pokemon battle with Adrian. One thing I think is hilarious is, despite being this wise and patient figure, he is also the most trigger happy with Pokemon battles. I think every time we've been in the wild, yeah, I think he's actually been in the most Pokemon battles.
Are you here for business or pleasure? Combat.
Oh, if a world tournament ever happens, that is definitely going to be Adrian's response. He has a love for Pokemon battling that he's, like, just now discovering as a trainer. Because we also have to remember, like, our character ideas were, like, when we were making our characters, we were told that, like, you know, your guys are just starting off being trainers. Like, they're just starting their journeys for the first time. And I just, I love seeing that as a part of each of our characters' development, especially in these earlier sessions with, like, catching Pokemon. Because I caught two Pokemon in the same session, and it's like, oh, I have lots of Pokemon, which I originally was so apologetic for. And now I'm like, nah, I don't feel bad. Like, just catch more Pokemon. Catch it if you want.
Yeah, because honestly, that's just... Well, other than, you know, Thief having to get you your sheets for all your Pokemon. I mean, after that, that's your problem to manage the sheer amount of Pokemon you have.
Yeah. But also, like, our Pokemon are leveling up kind of quickly. And so...
Yeah.
It's actually nice to know that catching all those Pokemon isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's actually a fun and, like, kind of good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get to the ranger station.
And then, well, no, we've got the route. We've got the route.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do have the route to the station.
We met Monica.
I spaced
you
a little
sort
bit.
Of abridged that route to, I caught two Pokemon. And then at the, and it, oh, man, three Pokemon were caught in the same episode.
Well, hold on. We also had Mushroom Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Mushroom Stew Guy.
Desmond climbed a cliff and then decided to eat some random mushroom soup.
And learned payback.
He was like, this mushroom stew helps you achieve justice. And Desmond was like, okay. And it tasted
like
horrible.
Justice.
But then Zephyr learned payback. And it's actually been really useful in two different situations at this point.
It's been very useful.
Foreshadowing. It's foreshadowing. Payback is useful at some point.
Yeah. I
always great when you have that one move and then you finally find a chance to use it.
Type coverage, baby.
Oh yeah. It's actually kind of crazy. Desmond, I think, at this point in the game has the most type coverage.
With the least Pokemon.
Exactly, because you have fairy, flying, grass.
Dark.
Whereas the
and
rest...
I'll have fire soon.
Yeah, and you'll have Wait. Oh yeah, because you're gonna get Ember eventually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh wow, yeah, you have insane coverage. I have, whereas I just have a lot of utility with my moves, which honestly I really like. Seeing that.
I love the way you use moves out of combat.
I feel like I could be better with using moves out of combat or in new ways. Which also means that I should probably be catching more Pokemon.
I love one of my favorite things is I love coming up with new ways to train my Pokemon. Because a thought that I had that I didn't really do because I didn't have, because I thought I didn't have time, but we clearly did have time, was to train Dual Chop and Twister at the same time by actually using Twister to like launch balls up in the air and then having Tusk use Dual Chop to try and hit the balls. And that would like train both accuracy and power for both of them.
Yeah, that's true.
So I want to see, like, different ways we can each come up with training moves. Like, another one that I have is Busby. When Busby is more...
agreeable.
Yes. Busby using, like, String Shot. And then if we have any, like, cutting or slashing moves, we train against String Shot using those moves, so that way, like, oh, we train String Shot by getting more durable each time, but then we're also training those slashing moves to cut through those more durable strings.
That could be very fun.
Yeah, just some ideas. Yeah, I had.
I really like that idea of training moves against other moves to multitask on them.
Yeah,
that's neat.
We've been talking about Route 35. Anything else you want to talk about there?
Oh, the ranger station.
woe to be upon them in the Ranger Station.
The Ranger Station is, I will say this, it was fun. I don't want to talk, it's not like I'm talking bad about it. It feels like I am, though. It was fun.
Things were very tense.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It was tense.
Even before what happens at the end of episode 8 with that woman coming up to the door.
I'd say it's a little tense, you know. We're in a
spooky abandoned station that we so happened to find in the middle of the deep woods.
And for some reason we decided to turn on the power last.
Yeah. And we had just read, I don't remember where we got this information. I think we read it somewhere. We read in the Ranger Station about a creature nearby that's very large, about the size of an Ursa ring. There are people that are gone.
Yeah. Shorter than an Ursa ring, but taller than something else, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But
bigger than it should have been.
Way bigger. And that was, I love the dramatic irony that we really like tried to play with that, because it's like, us at a game, we have that irony of knowing, oh, this thing's definitely going to attack us. Guaranteed. But then there's also in-game, it's like, oh, I really hope we don't encounter that. That would be awful for us.
I know Jorah said something specifically of like, well, that report from a bit ago, there's no way it's still around.
Yeah. And
trying to gaslight himself into believing it.
Yeah. I really love those moments. That the Ranger Station to me was really a fun moment for us to sit down and talk as characters and just learn a bit more, because that was like a moment where we all really got to have a couple of heart to hearts with each other. And that's something I really enjoyed.
And a guy from a Japanese based region and a guy from a France based region worked together and made spaghetti.
Yeah. We made Italian food.
We made Italian food.
Okay, to be fair though, Italian is pretty good, and pasta is not that hard to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can make a lot of it. So when you're in when you're in a, you know, group living situation, like a fire station or a ranger station or something like that, you just gotta make something that a lot of people can eat.
Yeah. And what I really appreciate is we immediately was like, oh, we're making pasta fizzle. Fun fact about that. I didn't know how to cook much. And so two of my friends came up to me, essentially dumped a pantry on my table, dumped two recipes, and was like, okay, this you're making tonight. We're teaching you how to make it. And so I had pasta fizzle for like 90% of my dinners throughout my senior year this year.
Ranger Station was fun.
The Rangers.
In retrospect.
So, I actually have kind of a question, and it could be a discussion depending on, you know, other people's thoughts on it. When you do random encounters for like the Pineco encounter or the Bee Drill, harassing those people having a picnic, do you just kind of, how do you build a random encounter?
Yeah, so I guess we can move into the next section of the interview then, which is your guys' questions for me, anything you kind of want to ask. Not gonna answer all of them maybe, but you know, if ones I can't answer, I'll answer. And so for this one, my process for building a random encounter table depends on how large the route is, how many encounters I'm hoping to get out of it. So Route 35 was, you know, a whole day of travel, so I made it a D20 table. And generally what I start with first is I figure out what Pokemon for your type specialties are going to be available on the route. So I'll generate a few, or I'll decide a few, pick a few out myself for whatever works for that route. And then I'll roll a D20 to randomly assign their spot on the table. And then once I know the Pokemon in those spots, once I know your type specialist Pokemon, I'll generate the rest of the table, their Pokemon. And usually I'll do that by referencing what the encounters are on Heart Gold, Soul Silver. And I'll throw a few of them in there. It's not usually a one-to-one on the route, but I'll throw a few in there. And then for any missing spots, I'll go to a random Pokemon generator, and I'll just click generate like 3 or 4 Pokemon, and then, you know, until I see something that like sparks an idea, I'll throw it in there. Once that random encounter table, that D20 table, is filled out with Pokemon, I just start coming up with potential scenarios. Some of them are simple, like, oh, a Caterpie was crawling on a log, to more complicated, a Beedrill is attacking a couple camping as a date. And when you guys roll those encounter tables, I just improvise based off whatever that prompt is that you roll. So Busby, you eventually caught him in episode 7, his was a Beedrill is attacking a couple camping. Well, that's exactly what happened, and it turned into a battle, and you caught Beedrill. And I wasn't expecting you guys to capture the level 3 Beedrill. Yeah. So it's been very interesting to see how Busby is playing into the campaign so far. But other than that, that's kind of my general process for making the encounter tables. I plan type specialties first. I plan based off Heart, Gold, Soul, Silver encounters. And then I'll fill in the rest of the table with the other Pokemon, like randomly generated Pokemon that spark an idea. And then I'll basically verb it. I'll attach a verb to each, you know, slot in the encounter table to give some action and stuff for you guys to react with and help me improv a little bit.
Here's a question I have, and you can say whether or not you've thought about this, but I know I've asked a couple of times out of game. Have you ever thought of doing, like, gift Pokemon? Or is it something you strictly just want to stick to, we catch Pokemon or we trade Pokemon?
I'm not opposed to giving you guys gift Pokemon. I just haven't planned any out yet. That's mainly where my stance on it is right now. I'm sure at some point there's a good likelihood of you guys getting a gift Pokemon, since there's a gift Pokemon in almost every game. What that will be, when it will be, I have no idea.
All right. It makes me excited to hear. Very excited.
Yeah.
Note to self, make Pix wait 3 years for his gift Pokemon.
But yeah, the reason I asked is because I struggle a lot with trying to make random encounters, and it's probably because I start with what I kind of just crack open the monster manual, and I'm like, all right, they are in this location. What are some things that exist in this location?
And for me, I actually appreciate you ask that, because I want to eventually run my own game that takes place in Alola. So trying to figure out those encounter tables has been very difficult for me, especially since before I run the game, I do want to develop the first whole island. Did you have the whole story with like this villain group planned out, or is that something where you have like a bit of the details, but you're developing it as we go through the story?
100% developing it as we go through the story. I know the general goals. I know the general, like, major points. But everything else I'm working around, which directions do you guys go? What's the speed of the plot development been so far? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to rush it. And then, oh, we're at the finale, but you only have level 7s. So it's all about keeping pace. And I have ideas. I have plans. But it's very much a, you know, we've only been playing since January. I'm not going to have a whole campaign planned out since then.
Yeah, that's fair.
I say as it is July.
You know, things happen.
Well, it's... I have a very good scaffold. And right now it's just about building the house as you all travel within it.
Yeah.
Because the number one trap you can fall into as a DM is over preparing your world. Some people really like world building thoroughly, deeply, having everything planned out Tolkien style. For a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, that can really drain your creative energy, and then you don't have that energy to spare when you're writing session notes. So what I'm doing is I'm pacing myself so that I can last for this campaign, because I really like what we've got going on in Johto, and I've got some plans, some hopefully good plans, fingers crossed.
Do TMs exist in the world?
Yeah, you guys were able to buy some at Goldenrod.
You're right.
Yeah, we just didn't. We bought more general supplies.
You bought a watch.
I did buy a watch. I just forgot that there were TMs. Do you need something to play it on, like a video, and then your Pokemon just copies the video?
The TM is usable on its own. Generally, what the mechanically that's going to look like is it'll give you that move, but that move will have the learning tag, so you'll have to keep training with it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Gotcha.
Do you just feed it to the Pokemon?
No, it's like a disc that you use.
Yeah, it's not like the soup.
This disc? No, I mean, yeah, but like, how do you use a disc?
That's like, it's like a portable DVD player or something.
Okay.
Or it's a training manual or something like that.
Okay, makes sense.
I don't know. I'm not thinking too deeply on how TMs work. I know in the games, it's just a disc. So I'm guessing it's some sort of training video.
Interested in what your take was on it.
My take's very inspired by Dunsparce and Drampa, where, you know, sometimes they get a scroll that teaches them the technique. Sometimes it's a book. Sometimes it's an actual, like, all right, here's the training video. So very flexible. It's not one device or another. It's a whole series of things.
I will say, the games, if the animation is to be believed, you just slap the disc on their forehead and then they learn.
Yeah. The games are a little weird, though.
Follow-up question. Was the mushroom stew a TM for payback?
Technically, no. Because the mushroom stew didn't have the learning tag. You just kind of... Zephyr just kind of learned it.
Yeah.
The mushroom stew was one of the weirdest encounters I made, and I'm actually so glad you guys got it.
That's awesome.
I'd ask what the other ones are, but I know eventually when we make our way back to Goldenrod, we're going to have that same encounter table.
Not exactly the same, but similar.
Yeah. Because I know, like, if we go back, the carnival where we found Tusk is probably not going to be there. Or maybe it will. Yeah. Who knows? I don't know.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
That's all the questions I have for you.
Yeah, I have no further questions, so.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Good. Then our last little question here is something for the viewers in particular. At the time of this interview, we all have actually played about 12 sessions with each other, and then we've also done a few gym challenges. Only 8 of those, maybe 15 or so play sessions have been uploaded, though. But are there any teasers you guys want to give to viewers for whatever awaits them the next few episodes? You know, what awaits them in the future of the podcast? Keep it teasery. You don't have to spoil things outright, but, you know, let's get some interest brewing.
Yeah.
Spiders. No.
One that came to mind immediately is grief over a dead Pokemon.
Wow.
not necessarily dead.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, no, definitely not dead.
You're not wrong, but I will say things have only gotten more interesting as the campaign has progressed. And much like the region, things change.
That's incredibly vague. I don't even know what you're referring to.
I could be referring to a lot of things, and that's the beauty of it. Things in Johto may look different, but at its heart, they are still the same.
Huh, I like it.
Keep that in mind as you watch the next few sessions, whenever those happen to be uploaded.
I have a bit of a teaser. I'm not as smart as I thought I was.
Yes, but what about Adrian?
See, I know what that refers to, and he's right.
I am definitely not as smart as I thought I was.
My teaser is, Desmond is always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
What?
Alright, now I gotta know what that one means.
Pixis is definitely a good one. It sets up.
Adrian's
going to do a mess up at some point.
Yeah, I don't know if always the bridesmaid, never the bride was the right idiom to use there, but we're going with it.
Okay. Well, then, folks, that is a wrap. That is our group interview. Fingers crossed you all got some interesting answers, maybe brewed up a little extra interest in the future of the campaign for you, maybe helped you put some faces or names to characters and everything, and hopefully you got to see what the players are thinking about with the campaign. We should be back in 2 weeks with episode 9, wherein we find out whatever is attacking this old ranger station. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing, commenting, anything like that, reviewing. Leave a review. We love those. And have a good day, listeners. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.